I did remind you all this morning, and I actually failed to also give the, there are a few people who came in yesterday after people introduced themselves, and one person who didn't arrive until late last night. We have a few people who joined us. Could you just stand up and introduce yourself?
Jeff Langer from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services Chicago Field Office.
And just to put you on the spot, what watershed do you live in? There you go. And Colleen, I think you weren't introduced.
I did that.
Okay.
I'm Colleen Charles. I'm with the U.S. Geological Survey here in Western Virginia with the Biological Resources System, and I'm the aquaculture.
Anyone else not introduced to that? Who's going to? Okay.
I'm Meg Smith.
There you go.
Word letter on.
They're pointing at me.
Okay, thank you. This panel that we just heard from, these three speakers, this is the second of three panels that are all meant to address those three questions that Dan pointed to and have the same desired outcome, point to the same desired outcome the MapWorld group wants out of this session. The desired outcome is to identify the most important criteria used by existing watershed-based planning tools / resources to analyze for our and restoration options. After yesterday's panel, session one, we did a little facilitated session on this question. We're going to do a Q&A right now, and then after that, we're going to focus on discussing how the criteria were developed. And then when we do the third session after lunch, we'll be focusing on the actual tools themselves, and we'll try to get into a little bit about what their strengths and weaknesses are, and the different requirements for data and things like that in terms of using them. So this is where we are right now. Session two. The specific goal is to determine which data are the most important to use to develop the criteria. We're going to do a short Q&A, about 10 minutes, and this really is, we'll ask the three speakers maybe to come to the front of the room again. This is ask them questions. We'll have about 10 minutes. We need to keep that real concise. And then we'll do a facilitated discussion to discuss what data or information have been used or could be used to develop the criteria. Just trying to get up a lot of ideas on the board like we did earlier without too much discussion. See clarification, maybe organize them a little bit, see if we can simplify it. And try and reserve some time to discuss what the strengths and weaknesses are of these different types of data sources. And then we'll hopefully have a little bit of time at the end just to kind of wrap it up. Sound good?
No,
yes.
Actually, it doesn't.
Okay.
I have a thought. Might throw a monkey wrench in your plan. It seems to. I thought that might throw a monkey wrench in Jessica's plan, but it seems to me that yesterday we never reached any sort of closure on the question of criteria and what are the important criteria. We were sort of all over the board. And the second question, which is what data are important, in my mind, that the answer to that question becomes obvious once you decide the criteria, and you can't really talk about it until you do decide the criteria. So my sort of question to the group is, if people feel like they have, looking at that list that's in front of me on the board, on the wall behind Ken over there, is whether or not people feel like, okay, we've answered the criteria question and we're ready to move on to data, or have we not really answered the criteria question and therefore aren't ready to move on to data?
Let me just point out one thing. I think one of the definite, in terms of this structure we have in front of us, allows us to talk about an issue which I think is very important, which is what are the strengths and weaknesses of these different data sources. One thing I think we'll get into a little bit more tomorrow, and hopefully I was hoping this would lead to, is the whole idea of different, in different districts are being different amounts of capacity and expertise in doing this type of thing, and in the scenario where there's very little capacity and very little watershed planning that's already been done, you know, what's the bare minimum stuff, data requirements for doing this kind of analysis, and you know, therefore kind of looking at the actual data, what are the strengths and weaknesses from that viewpoint? So I think that offers us this opportunity. But do people have a strong feeling about this? A MapWorld group people in particular, we could spend more time on talking about criteria if you feel that's necessary. Or the message I kind of got from you was we got up a lot of good ideas yesterday. And we said we would take from the three speakers yesterday, the speakers today, and hopefully the next three speakers, and we could pull together from their slides the slides on criteria, and you guys can digest it, or we can spend more time on that. So either discussing more about the data they use, the data they think are the most important, the strengths and weaknesses of that data, or spend more time on criteria. What would make your job easiest? I'm going to make them stand up and be accounted for.
I'd like
you.
I'm still in a data processing or information processing mode here, but I think yesterday we did I hope agree that we're looking for a tool here to help regulators do a better job of mitigation. Not a watershed plan. We'd love to have watershed plans, but they're, you know. And Dan, your presentation has thought about this before, but and I could be completely off base here, but one of the, I mean, before we even figure out what the criteria are, maybe as a part of it, I think we have a very fundamental issue here of assessment, as you said, and I'm not sure that we could really go to talking about criteria without solving or without bringing some more dimension or substance to that assessment.
Assessment tools?
Yes.
That's what we're talking about after the next.
Well, good, because we're headed, I can tell you as regulators, we're headed down this path, and Dan, you're not responsible. You're not. We're headed down this path of functions and values assessment, and we've been headed down that path for a really long time. And I'm not sure in terms of mitigation in a watershed context, that's what we should be doing. That's where I'm.
Yeah, I just think that I hear it all the time. The past 3 years around the country, people when they say watershed context, all they really mean is taking place in a watershed. All the stuff Barbara talked about yesterday.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And I just think that's a really critical element that we aren't really addressing. I don't see anywhere.
But the problem is that is such a fundamental, the paradigm is a word that I don't particularly care for. I much prefer hysteresis. we're facing an incredible problem with hysteresis in that going from one paradigm to another. And
I think we've got that, Catherine. Let me just see.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's a very important point. We want to make sure we get it.
If I'm just blowing steam, just tell me.
In a lot of ways, what we hear watershed management, what you're really hearing is doing different kinds of assessments in the boundaries of watershed, rather than in the boundaries of the watershed assessing more of a relative assessment for the purposes of mitigation. So not just the site assessment, and individual places, but comparing them. Is that more? There's not a comparative?
No, the assessment procedure has to integrate across spatial scales when it's coming up with its answers.
So what is the alternative to
measure condition or function or
injury? Let me just get you to say, right now you're saying watershed management is a site-specific assessment within the boundaries of a watershed. So that's kind of the quagmire.
Right.
What is the alternative to that? Just, I want you to articulate it so we can capture it so we can move on from...
Using assessment techniques that capture the multi-scale nature of the data.
Wetland assessment in a watershed context should mean that the data used to derive the measure of condition, function, integrity.
Used to measure the
condition, whatever you want to call it.
Condition, function,
integrity, whatever. Condition
is based on multi-scale factors in a watershed. In other words, the way a wetland functions or the condition of wetland is dependent upon not only what's in the wetland itself, but what's around the wetland and what's upstream from the wetland.
Okay.
And how do you capture that when you actually assess that wetland?
Okay.
You explicitly have to say what's in the watershed, what factors in the water are in the basin.
Before I take questions, let me just say, check, did we capture this issue? Do we feel like we're on the same page to understand this dichotomy?
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
I want direct questions to them, and then we'll figure out what they're going here. Just, I want to give people an opportunity. I know there was a question right after Ralph spoke here on that day. But take about 5 minutes. Please try to be really concise, okay?
I have a question. Here's a hard question. Within NWI, you have your classification system for the HGM modifiers, which is different than what John Hall would use, which is different than others. What's NWI doing internally among your group to standardize your use of modifiers?
They're letting the regions decide what their users want. We haven't really standardized it because it's still under developmental stage. And I mean, we have worked with different agencies, and they seem to like what we're doing, and we have correlations to wetland functions, you know, 10 different functions that, you know, we've worked with other agencies developing. I've made the suggestion that we need to come to some resolution on getting a standard, because regardless of the classification that we want to use, this type of information is what is useful to people. But sometimes that, you know, falls on whatever you want to call ears.
Well, no, again, this will have to be standardized. NWI can't be not standard across the system. That's pretty obvious.
We have other
issues. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's not standardized at this point. In fact, the information that's generated is available through our partners and not through our website.
Okay,
and once the information is standardized, then it will be put up on the web as part of, you know, NWI database.
Okay. Molly's next, and then Eric.
This is a question for Eric's line ahead to Dan. Where did the SAMP money come from, and are there RGPs for all these watersheds, regional general permits?
I don't know why she's asking you.
The money for the
watersheds comes from a variety of sources. The primary is from a water grant to the LA district for the SAMPs, multi-year. But it's also come from EPA state wetland conservation grants. It's come from the counties, matched by the counties. It's come from private developers, the Irvine Company, making California better for you.
I got it.
Rancho Mission Viejo Company. And from these kind of quasi governmental agencies, transportation corridor authorities.
And so it's a long time developing the money, I believe, if you get a word of grant out of that.
All the sources are. I didn't have anything to do with that.
Do you know if there's any RGPs?
There are not now, but I have with me all these SAMPs are in different phases. Some have gone through stages, but some have gone through all three or four of the phases I quickly described to you. Some are still in the first phase. So, you know, some have baseline assessment and no alternative analysis. Some have baseline assessment, alternative analysis, and watershed restoration plans. So San Diego Creek, the first one we started with just now, they have put together the watershed plan, which includes stuff on RGP.
And while you're on Capitol Hill tonight, you can charge the offices of your representatives. And
I'm not allowed to do that.
She's not allowed to do that.
I think that's actually criminal.
Eric, have a question? Is anyone else just here? And Rich, Kurt, and Susan Murray.
My question, Ralph, is for you. You talked about a kind of historic analysis, kind of a change analysis. When you go back and do that, are you pulling out the old air and reinterpreting them? Because it it looks like your mapping conventions and your assessment approaches have evolved over time. So my question is, on the change assessment, are you going back to the original source maps and re-photo interpreting them, or are you just pulling the old data set?
If you're talking about doing a more recent type of trend analysis, what we would do is, like if we identified wetlands with the newer imagery that we didn't identify before, that, but they were still there, we would add them to the original database and not just do a simple, well, this is what NWI had in the original map and this is what we have today, just do that kind of analysis. If we had a forested wetland in the, let's say, the 90s, we make the assumption that it was there in the 70s. We just missed it because of the quality of the imagery. But in terms of that pre-settlement assessment,
right, that's
we're
what
not
I
looking
asking.
At any aerial photos at all. I mean, we're just, they didn't exist.
Right. They didn't exist.
Except in California. On a good day, you can probably see that part. But we use the hybrid soil data, and certainly use that correlation. Now, again, I mentioned the problem with, like, if we're doing something around New York City, you know, trying to recreate the wetlands on the landscape, I mean, we have to go back to historic maps and so on, but those areas are basically kind of off limits for restoration anyway, for the most part, except if it's an existing wetland and improving its functions, because everything else is impervious surface.
Thank you. Richard, then Susan Marine, and Josh.
Yeah, two questions, I guess. One, are you merging or tracking with the NRI, Department of Agriculture?
I'm not tracking. I know Tom Dahl, who does wetland trend analysis, they have dialogues.
Okay, so there was, I thought a couple years ago there was getting it together, the minds, to see how we proceed. No resolution on that?
They got together the minds, but they did not agree.
Okay, can I agree? Okay. And then the other one is mapping isolated waters. Are you qualifying that somehow from a, stay away from the jurisdiction?
The word isolated, then. Okay. Never appears by itself.
Okay.
So that's the isolated, relatively
isolated. Well, I mean,
think it's isolated because of the methods that we use to determine what it's isolated.
For these questions, you should probably truck downtown to the Iowa conference. The lawyers I'm talking about.
Okay.
Is that it, Richard?
Yeah.
Okay, Susan Marie, and then Josh, and then I think we should try and move on.
I'm like you sometimes, I'm a little slow, and I want to make sure I understand what your point about factoring watershed characteristics into the individual site assessments. And the example, would an example of that be looking not only at how well a wetland could, for example, absorb phosphate or nitrogen, but looking at whether it's downstream of a source of that phosphate or nitrogen. So that's what you're talking about.
When you look at the hydrologic integrity of a wetland, you basically need to do a hydrologic analysis of the basin to determine, how routing and what the hydrologic regime of that particular wetland is, because that determines its integrity.
Okay, so there are some assessment techniques that have an opportunity. Is that kind of what you're
talking about? Well, yeah. Well, HGM and IBI both implicitly have tried to incorporate kind of landscape factors. Mm-hmm. You know, Jim Carr would sit here and argue all day with me that, implicit in IBI is all that stuff upstream. Okay? I mean, he would say that. He says it's implicit in the biological metrics you're measuring. They reflect it. Okay? Well, I like this. And he says, you can track back and figure out what it is.
That's
definitely the details.
Right there.
Yeah. So, but in HGM, some of the hydrologic indicators, which you try to make them, capture that the old wet opportunity idea. Okay. But it's not explicit. It's implicit. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm talking about now. Is saying one of the metrics we use for hydrologic integrity in California in watershed samps are what is the land use land cover of the basin. Okay, above that wetland, which is explicitly. Okay.
We have one more question, and we're going to try and move on. Josh.
Just a quick comment of clarification and then a quicker question. One, in the GOES project, you're right, we did not explicitly use watersheds to come up with priorities for the region, but at the watershed scale, a pattern emerged of a certain array of habitats that became sort of the self-replicating template of watershed around the region. But when we get to implementation of that, every wetland is looked at in the context of water supply and sediment supply, the source, transport, and reach.
Yeah.
So it built back into watershed context only in implementation of those goals,
right,
but not in the formulation of the goals.
Yeah, when the computer went and did 55 at once, I actually missed the slide where I reviewed what you and Cara and those people talked about, and I think I tried to capture that. Thank you.
So, and then for Ken, we're having trouble conveying the differences in resolution and error among different data layers that pop up in archiving the site that the public gets to use. I'm wondering if you have any recommendations as to how to get that across to people.
I think what you're asking is people not looking at a map and then saying that this is accurate to the centimeter out on the landscape, and then how you convey that to folks.
Or in some cases where there's been extrapolation from, say, from Landsat data down to square meter information, and it doesn't come across that way in the map. What we saw yesterday, you know, some detailed information about vegetation sitting on a blue line map from 1.4,000 USGS quads, where the blue line definitely doesn't show all the creeks, but the vegetation probably shows all the vegetation.
Right.
So the relationship between the two is inferred, but actually probably isn't very realistic. And we're having trouble conveying the differences in data layer integrity and resolution and error rate.
We have two viewers on our site. One is we're calling the, which we will assume will be used by the public and on that we limit the amount of coverages that they can look at. And my experience has been, in at least in meetings of folks, both the public and government officials and politicians, and that is basically they're all familiar with looking at a map, even a USGS quad map, and knowing that what's on the map sometimes doesn't always jive with what's out on the landscape. So we don't know if it's going to be a huge problem or not at this point.
Thank you. My first order of business. Okay, let me see some consensus that we're going to have a little bit more discussion about the criteria issue. For all three of these panels, the desired outcome is to talk about criteria. We did give the speakers three separate questions, and we wanted for sake of variety to, following each of those presentations, talk about something different. But we haven't worked through the whole criteria issue. I think that since it is the desired outcome to identify the most important criteria used by existing watershed-based planning tools and resources to analyze priorities and restoration options, that we should continue along that track. I want to make a new, we have a half an hour before Len shows up, before we have a break, actually, and then we'll give you some time to get lunch, and then Len will speak. We've got 30 minutes. This is my proposal, but I want to make sure we're on the same page. When we were doing the criteria exercise yesterday, I know everyone was pretty tired at that point of the day. There was a little bit of debate about what we mean by criteria, how we're defining it. So maybe we should just make it clear or explicit what that is. And Josh? No. Richard kind of gave me a suggestion, and so we should just make sure we're on the same page about that. What I would propose we do is talk more, maybe do a little bit more listening, and then more organizing, or we can do it the other way around, start with the general, for the lumpers, start with the general categories that we came up with that Eric offered to us yesterday, and maybe see if anything else needs to go into those categories. And then if there anything you want to add and about data issues, address that. Does this sound like a logical way to go from here? Yes, Molly. I want to ask, just let me know if you think this is a logical way to go, and then we can talk about issues. I need to agree with people about how we're going to spend the next half hour. Does that sound like it makes sense? Okay. Do you think we should start with... Oh, I'm sorry, yes. And yes. Let me ask you
first. I guess my question is really how, when you say define criteria, how specific are you asking the group to get with that?
Define.
Yeah. I just want to make sure people on the same page. adding additional things that we just have, at least, even if it's as broad, as really broad, just a way to start, because we didn't offer that yesterday, and I think it made people a little bit uncomfortable. And then we can either start with the broad categories and put more underneath them, a condition, landscape, logistics, and social, or we can just do more listing, and then assume that it's obvious to us. Molly, did you want to talk about this at all?
I don't know.
Okay. So anyway, what Richard offered to me, because there seemed to be a little bit of debate, what do we mean by criteria? This morning, he just offered this, that factors for determining restoration opportunities at a site specific, at a specific site. Does that seem to be what people are thinking of when they think criteria?
Can I explain
yourself? Can you explain yourself? Can you? I don't know.
What? Yeah, let me give it a shot here, because I think I'm going to try it. Dan and I were talking this morning along with Bill. Essentially, I think we're coming up from a top-down point. Criteria for determining the restoration opportunity. You walk out, two frogs, first slide of this whole symposium, two frogs walk out, and they're going, where is this a site opportunity for restoration? What is the criteria we're going to use? From the top down, you think, well, there's ecological factors, and there's social factors that determine whether this is a good spot. If you think of the ecological factors, then that breaks into two. Think of a little decision tree. There are site considerations. Like I'm looking at the site. I'm on the site now. Yeah, I'm looking at, hey, does this site make sense given the soils, given the hydrology that's there, given the vegetation, the three universal factors of well. Okay. There's criteria down the line which will determine whether it's the right soils or not. Then there's also, I looked around, I'm going to take one step up, I'm going to say, let's now look at the landscape factors, landscape ecological factors that make sense. And that has to do with essentially connectivity. How, let's look around the buffer, let's look around the land use, let's see how this site is connected to other things. What criteria would that be? We'll figure about it later. These are, we can come up with criteria for each of those factors. So we have site condition, landscape condition, and that's kind of like coming down from the top. On the social side, we have and so forth.
Is this,
yeah.
Okay, so these are from the ecological.
Ecological.
There's two aspects to it, site right. And landscape. Okay.
Site and landscape on the social side, similarly, site constraints. Now we get into constraints and opportunity stuff we're talking about. Property values, ownership, blah, blah, blah. Community, or essentially landscape, social, we'll call them community constraints, which has to do with zoning, growth trajectories, and things like that. Those are all factors, and we can keep on going down. Eventually, there'll be criteria that you would consider for each of these, and you could either do them as a checklist. I'm standing on site, check, 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 check. Or I would use that same model. Notice we're creating a conceptual model here that would drive Ken Brazel's GIS system that creates them.
Rich, did you catch this part right? So the ecological is to do components, site, landscape, and social, site, and community.
Yeah, and then it goes on from there. I mean, we can
okay.
actually come
this
up with criteria.
Broad.
That's the broad. Okay. And that's how you begin to...
Is this helping us, okay, is this helping us define it, or are we going the same page of how we're defining criteria, and then we can move
so
on from
we're not doing anything about the talks we just had. We're just talking about walking out to a specific site, like Richard was just saying, and standing there.
And what are we're trying to do right
more
now?
Or less, in effect.
That's a... And remember, one of the things, like remember yesterday, Sue also said that there's two tracks. There's the checklist approach, which we can do. We can say you walking down a checklist, or it's the same logic to create a GIS map. We can do both using this logic. Does that make sense?
Okay, wait, let me, she's confusing here, and I see hands coming up. Let me just try and step back a little bit and see where we are. Okay. We're trying to have a discussion here about the most important criteria that should be used by existing watershed place. The most important criteria, basically, to analyze priorities and restoration options. We came up with a list yesterday. I just want to make sure we're on the same page what we mean when we say criteria, so we can go on and have that discussion. This is a definition that was offered to me this morning. I just want to make sure people are comfortable with this definition. We don't have to have debates about that.
I think
Bob's winking at me.
I have Suzanne, Eric, Andy, and Rich.
I guess I'm not really comfortable with it because it's, and this is something that sort of came up yesterday, is that we're starting with the site and backing up. What happened to the watershed? Let's start with the watershed and drill down. And if you're starting with the watershed and drill down, you know, your definition of criteria for what's an opportunity or a priority is different. Okay.
I can handle that, but keep going.
You don't need to just start with the site. Is that your point? Okay. Next, Eric.
So I guess my comment is, I think the sentence should be written, factors for determining restoration opportunities within a specific watershed.
Yes.
I still think the framework that Richard just lined out is fine, and I think it's very consistent with what Eric Stein said yesterday in his lumping thing. I think those are similar, but I think that end of that phrase should be within a specific watershed.
Should be instead of?
Instead of at a specific site.
You will agree with that?
That's what the map back in
Iowa.
Okay.
Let me just, I know there's questions about this.
Sure. Yes.
It's
going to
be.
Okay. Andy, I still have Andy, Rich, and Frank in the queue. So the question is about this.
I have the same point. You have to make a decision first before you decide how you choose that site. And so that is the same point.
You're reinforcing that.
That's the level more about.
Okay. Yeah. Rich, and then Frank.
Same.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say the watershed is the universe, and these criteria are the sieves that you put through to get to the specific site where you're going to do your defense organization. Those are the criteria. The sieves that you run through.
It's iterative. It's bottom up.
Okay, Dan?
The problem I have with what Rich said is there's a whole set of criteria that we already use for determining restoration opportunities without consideration of watershed. What we're interested here is the new things that come out of the fact that we are in a watershed context.
Okay, so seems to be kind of agreement that we found this. I'm going to say we completed this.
Wait. Just one.
Okay.
One term. The term restoration. We're talking about mitigation. Mitigation. Shouldn't it?
Okay.
But there could be preservation or creation or enhancement.
And we are talking about inventory mitigation in the context of Timor. So, Molly.
My feeling overall after hearing and building on what I've already said is that any of these map products and processes that we've looked at in this session would be, I would say ditch all of the other guidance, you know, focus on getting these. If you simply get any of these map systems out there, it will make the change that everybody here is using a lot of words to talk about. But if we can use any of we have those maps on our desks, we've got the watershed context happening.
And your job is going to be easier.
And no question.
More likely to lead to mitigation that has a great spectrum.
Yes. So forget a lot of words in the guidance and the criteria. There's criteria for each of these methods already. So, I don't know how much we need to recreate.
Although the map work group wants to provide us to do those.
Make it brief and just say build maps.
Okay. So just get the work already.
Which maps?
Okay. So the criteria, the definition we're having right now for our discussion is about determining mitigation opportunities within a specific watershed.
I'm sorry, I have a problem with the word mitigation because if you look at the recent guidance that's under review right now for the in-kind, out-of-kind, on-site, out-of-site, whatever, that guidance basically says mitigation is defined differently if it's in a watershed context. Does it not? I mean, right now we have our own understanding of what the definition of mitigation is.
What is your proposal for this?
Go back to restoration.
How about we say mitigation / restoration?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you want to move away from this, Dan?
One more thing.
How
about if you add to that definition something about the fact criteria that are unique, that uniquely occur when you're in a watershed context? In order to distinguish it from all those other criteria that you can come up with, like in kind, out of kind, blah, 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 all that stuff.
Uniquely occurring factors for determining?
No, uniquely occurring criteria.
Well, you can't say criteria are uniquely criteria. Criteria are uniquely occurring factors, considerations, metrics.
Now, I think what you're saying is factors for determining mitigation / opportunity that uniquely occur at the watershed.
When you're in, when watershed. You're considering the watershed project.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So integrated. Yeah. I mean, it's integrated.
What?
They're integrated. I mean, you can't. I mean, you develop the factors. It's important to focus, but essentially, you wouldn't just come up with landscape factors, watershed factors, and integrated site factors. They're all integrated.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's the scale issue. That's
okay. Let me. I think we should move on from this, and let's honestly. We want to talk about criteria, so let's kind of belaboring the definition of it. Let's figure out how we want to. Now we only have 15 minutes. Do you want to do some more listing, or look at the two organizations that we've kind of been presented with, one here and one one that Eric offered yesterday?
I mean, I gathered, Dan, from what you said, that there's some glaring omissions from this list, that there's some new criteria that are unique to
different.
Looking at and trying to figure out sites from this new vantage point that we're missing from this list, which has a lot of sort of traditional
criteria. No, I don't mean to say that at all. The omission I think there is in addressing how the assessment is done.
Right.
Nothing to do with the criteria you select. I think any one of us in 10 minutes could come up with as good a criteria as we have there. We can belabor this forever, but I don't think we're going to get any better at it. We can focus it, certainly.
That is one of the writing up there. Now, the word location for me, speaking of what you just said, for me, location meant water supply instead of supply. Where is the wetland in the context of water movement instead of in transport? That was the location thing. And I look at these criteria and I think, well, addressing Bali's interests, you know, what are the maps? Which maps do we have? What do the maps show?
Well, I think it's the data. It's the same thing that's supposed to get to, right?
Yeah.
What are the maps? What are the data sets, right?
That's what I was saying yesterday. You're saying the criteria are really coming out as a data set. I'm showing a map that Bali can use to get a context for a decision.
I feel like we've done defining criteria. I want to put a little bit of focus on Eric for a second. We listed all these things yesterday, and we've come up with two different ways to categorize criteria, I think. Is this what this is?
Mine pretty much, I'm with Eric. The way he has conditioned landscape, logistics, social, that's kind of what I'm saying pretty much.
We didn't have a chance to talk about that yesterday.
I think we're mostly now going to talk about Eric's number two here.
Landscape position / context.
Where is the criteria?
Eric, when you offered the suggestion to focus on criteria more, you felt obviously that there was something you missed. Is there an area in particular you thought would we could benefit from focusing on more?
Yeah, I mean, the suggestion I had, I kind of had two parts. One was, I think what you've already done, which is sort of say, are we talking about a small list or like a very detailed list? I think we've already sort of had that discussion. I think the second part of my comment was really, when you say criteria, I think of sort of two levels. Now we're talking about resolution. You could say criteria is condition of the wetland. Okay, so that can be a criteria. I don't know what that means, okay? If you say that the criteria is you should restore a location that provides connectivity between two contiguous habitat patches. Okay, I know what that means, right? That's a much more resolved statement.
So this way, there's two things. Criteria, condition of the lens.
Well, I'm giving you an example. Okay, so the example I gave was, if you have a criteria that says improve wetland condition, okay, that's a criteria. So that's very amorphous to me. But if you have a criteria that says do restoration in a location that provides a linkage or a connection or a corridor between two contiguous patches, that has a lot more detail.
Sure.
So my question was really, where do you want, this is a question for the MAP, the members of the Mitigation Action Plan Group, is, I mean, what do they hope to accomplish from this? Do they hope to accomplish something along the lines of my latter statement, which is a very specific statement that's saying, if you're doing mitigation in a watershed context, this should be sort of a goal or a criteria you should strive for? Or are they hoping to produce something a little more generic and amorphous and letting the district sort of decide what that means? Because what sort of data you collect and all of those other questions sort of derive from where you start from with that initial statement. And that's what my comment was, is that I don't have a clear understanding from the MAP of what they
their expectation is when they mean when they say criteria.
And this didn't help.
Well, that you've defined criteria, but okay. My question is, what is the map? The members of the Mitigation Action Fund who are going to write this guidance, what do they want from us? Do they want very specific statements, or do they want something more general?
Oh, you're saying that they even know what they're looking for.
I think the latter, and I'll speak for the team, but y'all can chime in. The latter, we want the higher resolution. And I think, Dan, your presentation sort of got right to an important point, which is one of the higher resolution and perhaps overarching really important criteria to remember, and I don't think we captured it here, is maximizing the ecological benefit per dollar spent. I mean, that's not anywhere up here. But that gets right to where can we get our charge, which is to develop guidance to encourage place of mitigation where we'll get the greatest benefit, have the highest probability of sustainability. So that's a high resolution criteria that we, I think, would benefit from hearing from. So I guess to answer your question, the latter, not the former. The higher resolution, not the fuzzy amorphous.
So we're looking for criteria or factors that can help very specifically ensure or identify areas for mitigation that would have the highest benefit and probability for long-term sustainability. So if that's our charge, let's focus on that then. Have we captured those criteria, and you're feeling that they haven't been? What are, from the people who've worked on these modeling exercises and these assessments, what are the criteria that are necessary to identify mitigation that would have the greatest benefit and probability for long-term sustainability? Let me just try and get ideas out without too much more laboring any of the issues. But I think that's pretty central. I mean, that's most easily distilled central. Dan first and then Eric.
I think the list that we have already is just a matter of resizing it. For example, number 19, wetland rarity. All you need to do is restate that to say is our criteria is to restore wetlands that will increase habitat for rare species or a rare specific species. That's a very specific criteria. You can do it from just about everything that's on that list, kind of rephrase it in a way so it's a very specific criteria. I'm sorry if I...
No, that's fair.
I'm going to go back and say that again, I feel like the framework that Eric Stein and Richard set out, either one of those, are good overall frameworks as far as I think you need to think of criteria within each of those categories. And I think the job that this group needs to do is one, to kind of restate, as Dan just said, each of those short phrases into what an actual criteria statement, and then put those under those four categories. And I think some of the points that Dan said really are under the point number two under Eric's, what are the correct or the most effective analysis tools to use under that landscape position context category.
I have Frank, Richard, Mary, and
Memo. And Frank. Well, I was going to echo what you just said, but you also have to have flexibility. I think the way you write the guidance, you know, these are the specific criteria properly worded that may be considered or could be considered and are not limited to or may have these factors, but you got to, because every watershed is going to be different. Not all 25 of those things are going to be the important issues for each individual watershed. So when the guidance is written, it's got to not pigeonhole these things too finitely, but give specific criteria to be used when you're looking at it, and other criteria could be developed depending on the watershed.
The point is that the general categories of criteria are important, and then the specific ones should be worked out more regionally.
Well, the guidance could have the general categories and have examples of these specific criteria so people know what the type of things they should be looking at.
And I do think that is critical. I just want to set up that Sue had mentioned it as well, because our job, when we do something nationally, that has to be considered. So some of the specificity that might be the important thing are the criteria, and they may change, but the recognition that we can't be so prescriptive that it will not work nationally, that's something that's very important.
I have Mikey Richard, Susan Marie, Molly, and Penn.
I wish you could see a slide that I'm going to do this afternoon now. In Washington State, when we did our watershed characterization work, our site assessment criteria are different than our landscape assessment criteria, but they're linked. We look at a site scale, we look at functions like flood storage desynchronization. At a landscape scale, we look at how humans have altered the delivery and routing of water. Those two are directly connected, but they're different criteria assessed in different ways at different scales. And so what we're trying, I guess I agree with Dan that those things can be adjusted, but they're separate. At least we chose to separate them into landscape criteria and site assessment criteria.
Even one of the slides yesterday, we saw something, or maybe even today, like that. I mean, when we put up the central steps, there were kind of different levels of assessment or evaluation, and you're saying there's different criteria for each of those levels, depending on scale and, So different criteria for different scales of assessment. I have Richard and Susan Marie. Floor is yours, Mr. Long.
Oh, Richard?
Or Susan Marie? Sorry.
You said Richard, I'm sorry. Richard, to speak up.
Just did.
I think Eric, the statement you made was more, and this is getting into semantics, but it was more an objective. And you know, I think that. Objectives are going to depend, and particularly the objective of getting the biggest bang for your buck, because in coastal areas, things cost a lot, and getting the biggest bang for your buck in coastal areas is often not where you want to go in a lot of cases. So that was just kind of, I just wanted to kind of clear that up in terms of criteria, which has been defined as a factor versus your objective statement that we want to maximize a particular criteria like habitat connectivity.
Thank you, but Molly, I guess there's going to be opposite of just that. It's a criteria that's not up there that I thought was useful and interesting, but Dan was moving back and forth between those two maps. So there was a certain issue of level of difficulty, and you could see that the areas that you'd most like to replace are looking like they're running through metropolitan areas, so those aren't the things to focus on.
In a sense, production needs or production costs is what we're talking about. And I thought we talked about that yesterday, but I don't see it up here.
Yeah, so I was just proposing to
It relates. They're overlapping.
Yeah. It relates to the regulator's choice.
Okay. As a criteria, we say level of effort required.
Okay. It's expensive cost.
I can.
Yeah.
They already captured what I was.
Okay.
Yes. Sure. The criteria I was wondering about was kind of the follow the money. If investment's going in one sub watershed, should you just keep continuing to put money in that sub watershed till you get an outcome that's desirable versus the peanut butter approach, putting a little everywhere, even though your map showed you could put it all over the place. You may want the criteria.
Yeah, distribution of
yeah, can you direct it to an investment portfolio and then switch your stocks periodically and get a regulatory consensus on that? Hmm.
concentration versus distribution of mitigation efforts.
Funds. Focus versus peanut butter approach. Yeah.
So are we talking about Dan? Are we talking about at one scale we're talking about how the watershed affects the wetland mitigation site, and then at that larger scale, how that wetland contributes to watershed function or an output of the watersheds?
Both. Mm-hmm. It's not how. What did you say? What you just said?
I can't.
No,
I site-specific scale, you're talking about how the watershed affects the mitigation
right.
site.
Right.
And then at the watershed scale, you're talking about how the wetland contributes to the watershed or how it delivers a benefit to that larger entity.
Any wetland in a watershed is, in some cases, if it's at the bottom of the basin you're dealing with, okay, are you fine? Then it's the receiving wetland in that case. But then as you move downstream, it becomes a contributor to downstream wetlands. So the answer is yes, I think, if I understand.
But okay, well, my end point is water quality. Or if my end point is water quality, then I'm looking at how that wetland contributes to water quality. And so the watershed concern or the watershed endpoint, or what I would measure to find out whether or not I need to redistribute my investment, is whether I'm getting a payoff. And the payoff would be water quality, which is really a watershed function.
Are you talking about also monitoring or?
No.
Well, it goes there because ultimately what we want is environmental results. Right. I mean, we want to know that we're not just putting mitigation out there to put it out there. We're putting it out there to do some greater good, to connect habitats, to alleviate water quality problems, or to attenuate floods or something.
Let me get Richard's comment, and then I want to try and see if I can summarize a little bit.
I would say there's couple of orders. The first order, what I'm trying to do is put a sustainable wetland feature on the landscape and have it. So that's the idea. I want to consider the watershed inputs into that particular area. Is this a sustainable feature? Okay. If I can get, that's my first order. The second question is, okay, am I so good at restoration I can actually put these things anywhere to gain a benefit like water quality? And I'm sitting there, well, that's kind of a second order issue. First, I'm trying to put a sustainable feature in the landscape. If I get there, we're doing way better than we've ever done. Then, if I can actually locate that, and say put a headwater riverine wetland in its place rather than a mainstem riverine, I like to have headwater riverines because of water quality, then I can go ahead and do that. So that's the second part.
How can Zach capture that? Second.
So you probably can't.
But Bill and I are communicating.
I would say an appropriate and sustainable entity in the landscape. Because I can put an entity in the landscape that will last a long time that doesn't, it might meet all jurisdictional criteria, but doesn't.
So we're going back to the ultimate goal right here.
This is a long
time. I've got a lot of them in Pennsylvania, I'll show them to you.
No,
so I can. It's an appropriate mitigation where it has the greatest benefit probably long term.
If I can put an HGM, a wetland in the landscape that is a known HGM class. And I get that feature back.
That's good.
Right, well, that's
appropriate. Appropriate meaning a typical part of the profile. Right. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay.
Right.
So I guess what you're is kind of this here, develop that as to a project placement of appropriate mitigation where it would have the greatest benefit and probability of wanting to.
We just define appropriate.
Because it's based on a watershed approach that is looking at historic profiles versus current profiles.
Yeah,
okay. Let me just try and summarize
your answer.
Right,
yes.
Where we are. There seems to be some consensus that MapWorks Group's target is going to be to develop kind of categories of criteria, and then some of these are kind of examples of some of them. To a certain extent, they're going to be tailored locally. I think that's one point I heard. Another point I heard was that we're going to have different criteria depending on the scale we're focusing on. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'm not 100% clear on, which I just want to check in on this, because I think these heaps are going to be sticking with us. Eric and Richard, are your two kind of paradigms here? Different ways to display this?
Yeah, mine's diagrammed
is
in order. Yeah,
it's the same. Yeah,
yeah, well,
okay.
Mine just diagrammed is linear.
Okay.
Yeah,
are we comfortable with having two different ones up there, or do we feel like it would be worthwhile to kind of see if there's one that works best for everyone so that we could focus on these different areas maybe later on when we're having a discussion after the third panel? One, we have condition, landscape position / context, both of the first two. Dan pointed out kind of HGM wetland assessment issues, logistics, social, and here we have two, and each of those have two subsets. One is ecological and social, site condition, landscape condition, because this kind of gets into scale, and that doesn't so much.
We can take a break, and Eric and I can reconcile.
Just saying.
Okay. Anyone want to try and give any clarification you want on that, or are you comfortable with where we are? And want to take a break? Okay.